This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
I am an aesthete, ladies and gentlemen. There is nothing I love more than sexy people in my studio, and I have two of them. They know one another, thankfully, and we'll unpack a little bit about each of them and talk about new ventures and things with them, and we'll be coming back to do that very shortly. We've got something for everyone. Well, we are indeed talking cravings. Why would we be talking anything else? It is 5 minutes past one here on a Saturday afternoon, a glorious autumn Saturday afternoon in Melbourne, and there's things you should be doing. If you're not at home preparing some food or getting ready for a bit of a big night out, you should be perhaps out enjoying a cold beer and a burger in a beer garden somewhere, maybe even in St Kilda. Who would know? I've got a couple of guests here who are going to... We'll plan your afternoon for you in the next hour. Both of them you met before. The first wasn't so long ago. She was here talking about World Harmony Day and all sorts of things. Her name is Alice Zaslavsky. She is known as Alice in Frame. She's an author. She was on MasterChef. She's a TV star. She's everywhere. Alice, welcome back to Cravings.
Thank you for having me.
It's nice to have you back. Last time we were exploring your cultural heritage.
Yes.
Talking about you being a Georgian girl, a Jewish family.
Georgia girl, that should be a song.
Hey there, Georgia girl. your culinary history as well, we were unpacking. And since then, you've released your book.
I have.
Which we are going to talk about.
I can't wait.
It's very exciting. Mm. Also in the studio is a man. Last time we spoke was leaving his former home of about 18 years at The Point in Albert Park. He's found something slightly more relaxed but equally as busy. You may know the Grosvenor Hotel in St Kilda. Rabiani, welcome back.
Thank you very much,
Pete. It's good to see you. Just pull that microphone over to near your face so we can actually hear you talking.
And what a face, Pete.
I know, right?
Too kind.
And you two know one another really well.
We do, just through the foodie scenes.
Yes.
Yeah. First time we met, there were a lot of oysters and raw meat was involved at, where were we?
Francois.
Why not?
I love Francois. And you know that restaurant, you go there in 1986, and it is still almost the same as it was back in 1986.
Yeah, there's something to be said about consistency.
Well, you know, their exec chef had to retire because he was unwell, and the person who was his sous chef when they opened is now the exec chef and has been there since 1986.
Yeah, it's almost like...
Some of their floor staff have been there since they opened in 1986. Mm. It's an incredible story. How do you get that sort of longevity? You were at The Point for a very long time.
I was. Consistent team that defies everything. Even now at the Grosvenor, some of the team that was with me at The Point are now at the Grosvenor in a different environment and yep. still working very hard and true to the cause and eager to please. Mm.
Is it's a different environment for you.
It is a different environment.
A bit more laid back.
Yeah, but the fundamentals don't change.
It's all about service.
It's about the product, yep.
Absolutely. What's been the biggest challenge for you?
The culture I inherited in the business.
Right. Do you want to talk
coming
more about
from an, yeah, coming from an environment where, again, was fairly consistent, having spent 18 years there, you have a family environment or an overgrown family concern. People around you, you can look in a direction and more often than not, the team will know what it is you're looking at, to go into a new environment and almost start again. The only difference is, given the level of experience, I was able to perhaps achieve it a little bit quicker.
Do you sort of talked about the point being a family. You were there for a long time and you spend a lot of hours in the venue. It becomes a family for you.
Without a doubt. The contact doesn't alter. I remember walking out of home the first day to go to the Grosvenor, July last year, and the wife looked at me and said, "Is this going to be the point all over again?" I said, no, this is different. This is a pub. Give me a month. Within a month, she said, "I'll give you until Christmas."
Six, yes. And you're still together?
We are.
Excellent. Good
work. We are. And it's only because she's so understanding.
Well, doing what you do, you have to have an understanding partner. This industry is very demanding. And Alice, you know that more than anyone. Your husband is adorable.
He is adorable.
And
yep.
he's
understanding.
And he follows you around. He's almost like a little puppy sometimes, isn't he?
Well, he looks a lot like a golden retriever puppy, I would say.
Great
with that
hair.
But more importantly, he has been so supportive throughout this whole journey, as we say on reality television.
We hate that word.
We hate it.
In these studios.
But,
hate it.
Well, Nick and I used to write each other letters. When I was on MasterChef, we used to write each other like 19th century like letters. You know, people don't really write
terribly Elizabethan.
Letters. Because we only had 10 minutes of phone calls a week to our families. So.
Unless you were Matt Bayer and you had your phone in your pocket.
That's a blast from the past.
Yes,
I
know.
Matt, he'll never live that down.
Oh, no, he won't. He does have to shave off that beard, though. Have you seen him of late? Looks like Ned Kelly.
Ooh.
And thankfully, I read a couple of days ago, the hipster beard is gone.
Is it gone?
It's done.
Thankfully.
We are finished.
Based on where?
We will be back to... It came out of somewhere in Europe or the US that the fad is done. So the hipster beard, the beard is gone.
Yes.
I think it went too far when there were decorations you could weave into the beard for Christmas that lit up. I thought that was
far enough for
taking
me.
It a little too far.
Yep.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Bonjour, I am Gabriel Gatte. You are listening to Cravings with Peter Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
So your book, now you were both at, funnily enough, you were both at your book launch.
We were.
Ravi was there. How do you, you said you knew one another from the...
Through just the end,
yeah.
Don't we? Yeah, I think it's a very small food and bev industry in Melbourne.
We're very close.
We are.
And it's a little incestuous.
Yeah, but not in this case.
We only have one another, Pete. There aren't many perks in our industry.
Yeah, true.
We need to support one another.
We do indeed. I agree with you. And the industry has to support the industry. Otherwise,
yes.
The industry's screwed.
And that's exactly how I felt at the launch. I had so many people from the food industry at my book launch.
And so many of my friends were at your book launch.
How good. It was like a party for everybody.
I ran into Lou Fitzroy, who was going to join us today from Paddock to Plate.
Brilliant.
She and I used to work together. And after the bushfires in the Black Saturday bushfires, the ABC set up a digital radio station for Kinglake, specifically after the bushfires to help them regrow. And so I used to go in every couple of days. I'd go in and jump in the studio with Lou and I'd do footy tips and sport and all sorts of things with her for Radio Kinglake when we set it up.
That sounds wonderful.
We had a great time.
Initiative, yeah.
And, of course, I'm a silly sports person. So the A to Z of food.
Yes.
Tell me how this book came about.
Well, it's a food reference book for kids, A to Z. I'm a teacher by trade, so people always say to me, why did you choose to write a book about kids? And I said, there was never a choice of whether it was for kids or grown-ups. It was always going to be kids because I feel like there really isn't enough in the kids' space around food. But more importantly, when I was teaching,
Paleo Pete.
More importantly...
Wants to feed your kids bones.
There's some meat stuff in my book.
The meat's good.
Yeah. It was more a matter of where I start. So when I was teaching, I'd use food as a vehicle to teach about history or geography or English.
Because you always wanted to write a textbook, didn't you?
I did, exactly. So this is quietly a textbook. So if there are any teachers listening out there who are teaching, particularly primary, but also I'd say even up
early
to middle school.
Yeah.
Early sec, year 7, year 8, maybe even year 9. It basically offers you a really nice, fun, humorous framework from which to teach not just about food, but just about life in general. Like teach kids to be responsible, sustainable human beings, conscious, engaged.
Respectful of the earth, respectful of where food comes from.
100%. All
agree,
the things.
Pete. Totally.
Do you think our kids are getting smarter, Robbie, when it comes to food?
Definitely much more educated. And believe it or not, the burger bar, as a new parent of a 3-year-old, not all fast food or convenience, it should be junk food.
Mm. Correct.
Not all burgers appear from a window within 28 seconds.
Yep. We drive through.
And not all cheese is square. So I really want my child, my son, to grow up knowing that you can have a good burger, whether it's a mushroom burger with an herb mayo and Gruyere cheese or a traditional cheeseburger.
Well, let's talk about the Burger Bar for a second, because it's opening in May. At some point in May at the Grosvenor.
Yes.
Something that Ellis asked you off air, and I want to ask that question again because I think it's important. Was it difficult to change the team and to say goodbye to some of the staff?
Yes, of course. It's always difficult. But as they say, no progression without change.
Mm.
And it's fine to tell someone sometimes that the business may have outgrown them. Mm. More often than not, people are doing the right thing and the intention is good. You try and work with that first. Mm. But very quickly, with a level of experience, you can see the intention.
Mm.
And to say goodbye to people, no, it's in answer to your question, no, it's not easy, but you need to do it.
And you can't change a culture with the same staff?
No. No. I did read somewhere once, in order to achieve a change of culture, you'll need to rid 33% or a third of your workforce.
Mm.
And I thought that was just based on a whole set of American averages, but put it to practice and it worked. Mm.
So the Burger Bar opens in May. Why burgers? Is it because they're so hot right now?
Look, there is obviously commercial viability in the decision.
Yep.
But our focus is beef. Gippsland, 100% certified Angus beef.
Comes from?
Gippsland.
Yeah, where in Gippsland? You can mention the farm.
No, I'd rather not.
Okay.
Only because it's not limited to one farm.
Right.
It is processed in export accredited abattoirs and the specs are fairly strict. And I know beef, having the background of the point.
Yep.
And prior to that, I worked in an abattoir and never too proud to say that, to work in a slaughterhouse, a kill floor, a boning room, even in the meat packing area. So to understand meat and then to be able to utilise the trimmings into something that is tasty and delicious, such as a burger, that's where the commercial viability comes from. But that's, you know, the Grosvenor. We sell probably close to 300 burgers a week inside the pub in the bistro.
Mm.
So now they have a little takeaway outlet, just complements the offer.
And it's all about growing a business, and as you say, commercial viability is a very real thing. You're not in business to make friends, you're in business to make money.
Yes, but in hospitality we do need to make friends because that's in turn supports your business.
Your loyalty.
But when you have a business that spans almost two postcodes between Balaclava and St Kilda Reese, because it is a large footprint, you need to activate each and every area or space within that business because it all needs to work off its own steam and pay its way. And that's where the commercial viability, but end of the day, you only do something A, you know about, and B, you enjoy. And
indeed,
meat and hospitality, I enjoy them both.
Excellent. A man after my own heart. Alice, a bit of meat in the book.
Yep, bit of meat in the book. I actually brought the book in, Pete, so I can read from the meat page.
My copy, as you're doing that, my copy did arrive and I have gone through it quite closely.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I like about the book is that it is incredibly educational.
Thank you.
It's pretty to look at.
Thank you.
And talking about commercial viability, it's at a really good price point where parents can buy it for their kids.
I agree. And that was a real conscious choice. The book is $19.95, which is unheard of. Mm. When you look at other cookbooks, they tend to be around the $40, $50 mark. But that was a real...
Some of them up to $200?
Exactly. You could put this on the coffee table, but I'm hoping that it ends up, you know, on the kitchen floor with the kids making a mess all around it. But I want it to be used. And Beatrix Potter said something many moons ago about the price point of her own books, her Peter Rabbit books, and that's that she wanted little bunnies to be able to afford it. And that's exactly the same for me. I didn't want to write a book that was an elitist kind of, you know, price point and an elitist message as well. I wanted to make sure that the contents of the book were accessible to a kid from any sort of background and any sort of socioeconomic point as well, because I know when I was 8, 9, 10 years old, there's no way that I could have said to my mum, can you go out and buy me this ingredient? I would have had to use what I had.
Mm.
And I wouldn't have had a food processor either. I would have had to use a grater or, you know, a peeler or whatever it was that was in the kitchen.
Yep. And how much did you think about that when you were putting that together?
Mm-hmm.
How much did you go back to your own childhood and your own sort of culinary culture in your house to build what are practical recipes?
I think that anyone who writes any sort of book is always going to think back to their own experience of life. But I feel like a cookbook in particular, food is such a personal thing, and so many chefs these days are writing about their backgrounds and their histories in their cookbooks. And this is no different. So there's a borscht recipe in there. There's my dad's baba ganoush, and there's stories of my upbringing, basically. There's a chicken soup, talking about chicken soup as
penicillin for the soul.
For the soul, that sort of thing. So it's certainly, and it's got Miss Z's rambles inside, which when I was teaching, I was Miss Z, because kids can't say Zaslavsky to save themselves,
yes,
which is why
enough.
I'm now Alice
adults
in Frames.
Adults can't say it either.
Exactly.
I don't know how
You're
many times
better,
I've
Pete.
I know
good.
I practice.
Zaslavsky.
I practice when I'm in the shower.
Oh, that's yeah.
Saying your name you so I get
tell.
It right.
The intonation's perfect.
Oh, thank you.
But so there are little rambles inside, but the rambles are another opportunity for me to teach. So, for example, this is a little ramble that is really quick. Can I read it?
Mm.
Can I? Ravi,
yes.
Would you mind?
No, please
awesome.
Do.
Good. So, this is in the meat section, and there's a nice big picture of meat that's, there are bits of it that are well done, but also bits of it that are rare. And I think that for kids, most probably haven't seen so much, you know,
blood
but they need to see that. But anyway,
yes.
When I was about 8, I asked my mum where the steak that we were eating came from. She explained that steak came from a cow, which had been raised for its meat, looked after well, killed as humanely as possible, and sold at the butcher's. It took me a while to get over the initial shock of knowing what it was I was eating, so mum gave me a really great piece of advice, as mums often do, that's always stayed with me. She said, never to stop asking where my meat, or in fact, any of my food comes from. This was the first step to being a conscious consumer.
Wow. And here's cheers to you, and here's cheers to your mum, because the more conscious we are as consumers, and the more that we can teach the generation behind us to be conscious consumers, the better off the planet's going to be. I won't rattle on too much because it sounds like I'm on a soapbox. You are on Cravings, 27 minutes past one, with Alice and Robbie with me until 2 o'clock. Some messages and we'll return and talk more about burgers and books.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Hi, I'm Heston Blumenthal. You're with Pete Dillon on Cravings on Joy 94.9.
We are talking books and burgers right here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. It's 1:30. I'm fond of a book and I'm fond of a burger. So this all works very well. And I'm fond of good-looking people in my studio. Alice Zaslavsky is here. She is Alice in Frames. I've finally got it right. I have been practicing in the shower.
So impressed.
And Rabiani is also here from The Grosvenor. We were just talking about books, and you both have some really good opinions about cookbooks. And, you know, we can pay hundreds of dollars for a book, which is sometimes unnecessary when we're not reinventing the wheel.
Mm.
And it's also, I think, some of them are so difficult. The recipes are so difficult, and you need to have all this crazy equipment in your kitchen that we sometimes forget. And I think, Robbie, this is your point. We forget the end user.
Yeah. If you keep the end user in mind, I think you'll have a successful book and a successful story to tell. And that's one thing that definitely I've found with Alice. As I said, the night of the book launch, I was determined to support where I could. But then to purchase the books and gift them to the children I have and to hear the feedback from their parents, I've now gone back to Alice and said I'd like a couple more.
Mm.
Over time, you work with chefs and you hear their story and what they would like to see in a book, and you need to quickly remind them that you're not writing a book for other chefs, and more often than not, if those other chefs were to buy them, they'd probably slate you anyway. And not everyone has a pantry the size of Simon Johnson or Essential Ingredients, so we need to be mindful of the end user very much.
And Alice, that's been very much the focus of what you've written.
Absolutely. Mm. And there are so when I was first writing the book and talking about, you know, use your food processor, use your blender, it was my publisher that actually said to me, what about the kids that don't have one? I said, holy moly, I wouldn't have had one. Mm. And so I created this thing in the book called No Biggie Boxes. So if you don't have this, no biggie, use that.
Mm.
And that's kind of a really great way of starting to teach kids to be resilient and adaptable, which the kitchen is a perfect place to kind of teach them that, because if they learn everything from video games, then they'll just think, oh, you know, well, I've made a mistake, that's okay, I can just reset.
Yeah.
But you need to know what to do from the mistake to, you know, turning it into something delicious.
So you don't think every 8-year-old has a Thermomix?
Look, they I like your face.
I don't know.
Look, more and more, I mean, on the point of thermomixes, I think more and more people at home are starting to use that sort of machinery, but it's okay if you don't. And I try to be really mindful. Like, I've got two I've got two Thermomixes.
I don't have one and I don't want one.
And that's fine. Like, you know, it's okay either way, because what I try to do is say, if you don't have a Thermomix, then do that. It'll just take longer. Like, the reason why we use it is because it takes a recipe from a 45-minute recipe to a 15-minute recipe, and that's pretty awesome.
But for me, as a chef, and as somebody who I will never cook for money. I will only ever cook for love. But I love the tactile stuff about cooking. And, you know, I have appliances in my house, the KitchenAid appliances that I bring out and use a lot. They do a lot of the hard work for me in so many respects. But, you know, measuring the bits and watching a dough or a batter evolve in a dish, or I love the tactile nature of food. And that's why I'm railing against the Thermomix. Everyone says, have one. And I'm like, I don't think so.
Well, that's where the love comes from.
Yeah, right? The sort of...
Well, the tactile, the feel, the touch. I mean, I know when my mum cooks, it's all these little things she does in preparation to make a hummus. And back on your dad's baba ghanoush, I think we should have a baba ghanoush off.
We should.
Where I'll get my mum, you get your dad, and we'll see
and
who
I'll
smokes
make my
better
own.
Eggplant. But
oh, man.
I digress. I'm talking about the little, you know, bits that they do, the salt they add, the cold water, the hot water.
Absolutely, yeah. I'll still saute my onions in a pan and then I'll put them in a thermo to whiz them up.
I'm going old school. I'll make one as well. I don't have parents to make one for me, and we're not wogs. We're skips, bog Irish boring people who think that potatoes are exciting.
What's a skip baba ghanoush called? Eggplant dip.
Yeah, eggplant dip, mate. It's what they sell it at, is in the supermarket. If you go into a supermarket, you buy eggplant dip, and I look at it and I'm like, are you kidding me? I see caviar dip and it's like, dude, tara masalata, not that hard to say.
Yeah. When we introduced about 150 grocery items to our bottle shop, just to encourage people to come into the store and have a look at what else there is other than Recorderlig cider. And I asked my mum to make a batch of baba ghanoush and hummus. She said, who's going to buy that? Well, I'll
tell you. It's flying off the shelf.
She's replenished those shelves numerous times since.
Is that going off? Yes. Has it got a brand?
My Mum's Dips.
My Mum's Dips.
Brilliant. I will come and buy them.
Your money's no good with us.
Does she make a tara masalata?
No. Don't swear to her. That's Greek.
Oh, okay.
They keep that pink dip.
Yeah, it depends who
it's
you
actually
ask.
White.
Us Jews, we make a good caviar dip too.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
We're Irish, not known for our caviar dip.
This is all getting a bit hot under the collar. I'm married into a Jewish family, so this is all getting a bit too close.
Let's go back to the book and things that you're more comfortable with. One of the things I also really like about this book is there is an education about the provenance of food. And I think if we're going to sustain a planet and we're going to, you know, have generations of farmers to continue, we need to think about the provenance of food. And I think you address that really well, and I'm sure you're talking about that with the growers in Gippsland and all of that. Showing kids what the provenance of food was. I remember watching MasterChef Kids, and I don't want to make too much of MasterChef, but one of the benefits of that program is children know more about food than they did before that program started.
Absolutely.
I remember people punishing their children by saying, if you don't do that, you are not watching MasterChef at 7 o'clock, and they would do the chores. There was a MasterChef Kids, and there was a young girl on there who was astounded that peas didn't come from a bag in the freezer. She didn't know where peas came from, that they grew in pods. And hello, why wasn't she reading books as a kid where there's, you know, peas in pods and things in fairy tales and all of that? So I was quite astounded by that. And I think today there's a generation of children that, as you say, Robbie, think that food comes from a drive-through.
Pete, it took 9 months. One of the very first changes at the Grosvenor Hotel was the children's menu. And again, it wasn't a political statement. It's because I'm a father. And baked fish fillet, steamed vegetables, obviously charred steak, veggies again. But the one thing that shocked me was it took 9 months for a parent to actually say, you know what, I am so glad to see that not everything comes from a deep fryer and
it's not all nuggets and chips or spaghetti.
Absolutely, yeah. I think Matt Wilkinson does that well as well over the river at Pope Joan. I think you two have really nice complimentary sort of kids' menus. Yeah, and it's... The other thing I think that's really important is people say, oh, kids' food. Kids' food is just a smaller version of
adults' food. Absolutely.
It should be.
Exactly right.
Yeah, just a smaller plate of the same. Yeah.
And I sort of go back to the provenance. I think farmers are becoming a little more clever than they were two generations ago about what they farm and how they farm. We've got people interested in organics and biodynamics, and that runs into wine and all sorts of places now where it was, you know, we were drinking out of casks 20 years ago, and some people still do. So I think as we've become more aware of provenance, we've become more discerning as diners and consumers. When we go into a store, we want to know where the carrots have come from rather than the fact that we've just got a bag of carrots.
Well, look at yesterday's ACCC decision.
Mm.
I'm not sure.
For those that don't know, talk through.
Well, ACCC, Coles, bread baked daily.
Yep.
$2.5 million fine. I think if the big end of town are standing up and taking note, and that'll flow through and push down, and people will start asking questions. It took former Premier Jeff Kennett to kick and, you know, make a song and dance about it.
One of the things that we've seen in the UK is that menus now have to contain all of the ingredients in a dish.
Wow.
Not their provenance, but they have to contain them. And I think it's going to eventually be the same here because of allergies and intolerances, that everything is going to have to be listed. It's going to make it difficult to print a menu because they're going to be all of a sudden like the yellow pages. But I think it's important that we understand where our food comes from.
Without a
doubt. And what's in it.
And I think Alice's mum's advice resonates with all of us. You've been able to articulate that, Alison, in your position, and you know, just seeing the people at your book launch is testimony to you as a person, but to be able to communicate that through a book, Mum said to me, don't ever stop asking. I think that's the biggest advice we could give to any of our children.
That's right.
And to ourselves. Yeah. Still, as we're learning, I was listening to another show here on Joy a couple of days ago, and there was a couple of, I think it was a breakfast show, and the boys were talking about what they'd cooked, and I sent them a message saying, you need to spend an hour with Pete on Cravings because we need to increase your repertoire. Putting croutons in with some leaves doesn't necessarily make it a salad. And no disrespect to the boys from Tag Team Program, but I think there's some adults who could do with a bit of a kick around the bum to understand more about food as well.
One of my friends actually said that this book isn't just for kids. She said, Alice, you're missing out on a whole new market. And I said, what's that? Boys moving out of home.
Absolutely.
Avocado feta mash on toast. This is how you make it. It's pretty funny.
And you know what? That will impress their girlfriend the next morning as well.
We're listening to you. SMS 0427 JOY 949. Email onair at joy.org.au or call us 1300 JOY 949.
That track was Noah and the Whale and it's called 5 Years Time. I like it. I think because I like songs where people are whistling. I don't know why I like songs where people are whistling. I did play a bit of Barry Manilow this morning because he finally married his, he got married late last year to his business manager, Gary. So now they're going to be Gary and Barry Manilow.
Manilow.
Gazza and Bazza, mate.
What about the is it the Scorpions that do?
Oh, yes, the Winds of Change.
Winds of Change.
When they're talking about Gorky Park.
Yeah.
And there was also Peter Bjorn and John did a song that had whistling in it as well, which I seem to like. And of course, the track I played earlier was Money, Money, Money by ABBA. Two reasons. We are talking about money for our tech drive. We want your money. And I'm going to afford this tonight dressed as Bjorn from ABBA.
Oh.
There's four of us going to a 40th. Hello, Beth, if you're listening as you're furiously preparing your party. We're going to a 40th, so four of us are going as ABBA. Nath, my partner, going as Agnetha.
Please put photos up, Pete.
There will be many photos.
Is there a hashtag?
Before.
Yeah, before. We don't want them after. No. So I have this lovely pair of velveteen coveralls, and, you know, bib and brace overalls that have got flares, big white chunky shoes with about a 4-inch heel on them. Watch me go ass up in those and break something by the end of the night as I'm doing a bit of a disco. It is 1:45 here on Joy 94.9. And something that has surfaced in while we were playing that track, one of my guests has dropped a little nugget of joy on us, and it's called Culinary Carton. This is a new business for you.
Yes, it is.
Tell me all about it.
9 months ago, in between the point and deciding what to do, and there was an idea to take restaurant quality food into the home, and this is not a Weight Watchers program of any sort,
or light and easy
but no, even if you see their advertising, they're changing their store, their tune as well, but this is about chefs going to market, you being the guest, decide on a menu for 3 or 5 nights of the week, minimum of 2 guests, and we'll get a meal to your house or the ingredients for a meal for you to finish anywhere between 10 and 35 minutes with a level of difficulty or ease in which for you to complete the dish, but we do all the hard work for you. So it's delicious made easy for the taste rich who are time poor.
So in the same time as it would take to order a pizza almost.
So what the idea is, Pete and Alice, is Sunday night you'll sit there and think, okay, meals for the week.
I'm home, but Tuesday, I'm only going to be home 3 nights. Yep.
you'll go into the meat carton or the vegetarian carton or
which
to the
which
pasta.
Which I'm doing as you speak.
And you'll select your meals. We will then have them delivered to you by Tuesday, and you complete the meals. Everything's labelled, tagged. There's nutritional value on each chart and on each recipe card.
It'll also, so there's recipe cards?
Yes. So it'll be maximum of 8 steps. You follow those 8 steps. There's a little clock at the top of it. So if you've come home from work, you're feeling a little bit tired and not too adventurous, you'll go for the item that's going to take 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And it could be gnocchi, braised lamb neck ragu, bit of crumbled feta and black olives to finish. That's one of the dishes, and that should be 10 to 12 minutes.
So the ragu arrives as a ragu?
Everything's there. All you've got to do is bring it all together. We even include the salt. We work on the assumption that everyone has at least a saucepan, a fry pan, an oven and a stove,
mm-hmm.
and the rest we do.
And not an egg flip or, you know, spoon.
Yeah, we try, as you know, well, it goes back to Alice's book, not everyone has a, you know, a
Thermomix.
A thermo at home.
KitchenAid, yes.
but there is at least a rolling pin, mm-hmm. and if there isn't, we'll use a bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. There'll be a few little cheeky
you know what works really
well
as a rolling pin? If you have a roll of Glad Wrap in your cupboard, you take the Glad Wrap out of the box, and what you're doing, two things. You've got protection, so Glad Wrap as protection for your food, and you use that as a rolling pin.
Pete's Handy Hints.
Genius.
Yeah. Yep.
Put
we might put
on
those
box.
On, yep, on
should,
the box as
yeah,
well.
Definitely.
Pete's Handy Hints.
I'll be writing a book soon. Cravings Handy Hints.
Oh.
I'll be like cross between the CWA and a drag queen. I should start a little video series.
Do it.
You can come and help me.
I will.
And you can be the entrepreneur behind it.
Oh, hardly. At the very least, we get a cabaret show. I don't know.
Yeah. Only if you bring those white wedges. They sound amazing.
I do like to sing.
Likewise.
Yes, I got caught out in the shower this morning, top of my voice, and my partner came in, because I thought he was downstairs, came in and he said, is that really necessary on a Saturday morning? And I went, oh, sorry.
What were you singing, Pete?
I Feel Pretty.
Oh.
From a musical. Of course
good.
I was.
Of course you were. Of course you were.
That, or the other song that's been in my head all day is I Can't Smile Without You by Barry Manilow.
Oh.
Because I've had Barry on my mind all day because he got wed.
Oh, Barry and Gary.
Yes, Barry. Are you a fan of Low?
I'm such a Low fan.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm an easy listening.
You like easy listening
I
music?
I love easy listening. I grew up listening to easy listening. Can I say the station? Maybe not.
Of course you
well,
can.
Well, I was a 1377 girl. And,
3MP.
It was 3MP. Yeah. 1370. And back in the day, okay. So, funny story. I went in for an interview, for what do you call this? This
an
chatting.
Interview.
I came in for an interview last weekend with Ros Grundy. And Brett DeHoove.
Yes.
And he said, oh, did you find it hard to get here? And I said, no, because like a million years ago, I won a Bataki Christmas ham. They have those phone-ins where you have to call, like when you hear a certain sound of music. And I called up a million times and I finally got the Bataki. But the funniest
good
thing...
Good Jewish girl.
Good
Jewish.
I was just going to say, and in a Jewish family, what did you do with
on
it?
On a Saturday. Well, I took it to my then boyfriend's house, who was a German-Irish Catholic, and they said, thanks, but we've already got our ham from Jonathan's. So I think like it was a long, long, slow process of eating ham for like three odd months. But
whilst your mother wasn't looking and you were hiding it under the bed.
Yeah, exactly. But most bad Jews love ham more than anything. Bacon goes off
bacon
in together.
Yeah. I'm always asked, is this on the capricciosa? Is that kosher ham? I say, yes, of course.
Yeah, there's a story, I can't remember who, I think maybe John Safran might have told the story, that there was a religious Jewish man that would come into the Carlisle Street Coles and say, I bless this ham, and then he'd order it and he'd say it was kosher ham and go home and eat it. I don't know who it was.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Well, I used to, back in the day, I was actually a full paleo person before MasterChef.
Oh,
full, like proper. I know. Don't give me those eyes, you two. Proper. And like felt great. But then MasterChef happened and I realised if I'm going to be in the food industry, I have to eat everything.
Mm.
So these days there's nothing that I won't eat. And I love bread. I'm so happy.
Oh,
I'm just
same.
Such a and pasta. I just like it. And we actually, we've taken to milling our own flour. So you buy whole wheat and you whiz it up and you make...
In your Thermomix.
In, it's
For those that don't have one at home, you can use a mortar and pestle and be there for 3 days.
Yeah. No, but,
you get 200 grams.
You can buy, like, if you're a person that eats a lot of bread and pasta,
yes,
you can buy a stone, like a flour grind mill. That's my migrant English. It's excellent.
I know.
When I get excited,
going, the hand's going with it as well, describing it.
So
great for radio.
Like charades. You can buy one for about $200, and considering the flavour is so different, we went and listened to Dan Barber speak, Dan Barber from Blue Hill, for the Theatre of Ideas and Food and Wine, and a lot of what he was saying was about soil and flour, and then Nick's been reading The Third Plate, which is Dan Barber's book. If you're interested in this stuff, check it out. It's very good, very easy to read, even though it looks really thick and cumbersome. It's really easy to read, but the flour that we're eating, a lot of it is actually rancid. So especially when you're eating white flour that's been processed a million years ago, no wonder it makes people sick, because you're not actually eating anything that's got much nutritional value at all. But the difference that you feel eating whole wheat flour is pretty incredible. Mind you, it's really hard to work with. So it's pretty hard to get your own flour if you don't have one of those little flour mills. That's our next little investment. But at the moment, it's, you know, we're getting there. We made a quiche. It was good. Pancakes. Whole wheat pancakes.
I saw those.
They were amazing.
Saw those and I was jealous.
I want you to go back to whole wheat. The whole wheat flour being rancid. What do you mean?
Yes. Okay. So as soon as the whole wheat is ground, so if you're eating wholemeal bread or whole wheat bread, if there's a long time between that bread, that flour being ground and then being baked, the endosperm or the oils will actually send that flour rancid. And so you're eating bread that's not necessarily, like, the nutritional value depletes really quickly. Everyone knows that. I'm not a nutritionist.
No,
so if someone's listening going,
though,
this is BS, Alice, please write in. If it's IBS,
Write to me.
That was Write to Robbie.
Maybe Emma Sterling, who is our resident dietitian, might be listening. She might be able to give us some help on this
Let
at least home scoop nutrition. She was also at your lunch.
I believe so.
Yes.
Yeah. Hi.
It is 5 minutes to two here on Joy 94.9. We are almost done, so a couple more messages.
Your community is our business. Joy 94.9.
We are almost 3 minutes away. I will mention it once more, our tech drive. We do need to get to $20,000 by midnight tomorrow night. Otherwise, the whole station will just explode and we'll disappear. No, it won't really. But our transmitter does need to be replaced. So if you've got a couple of shekels lying around in the ashtray of your car, ring up, donate them. You can go to joy.org.au, hit the donate tabs, and you can give us the money that's in your ashtray or the console of your car. Very simple. I flog it enough. Speaking of flogging things, we have about 3 minutes. We're into the plug section. Let's start with your book. It's called...
Oh, it's called Alice's Food A to Z. If you want to know where to find it, go to my website, aliceinframes.com, and there's a list of stockists, and you can find it everywhere.
And we do know that you can go to our friends' Books for Cooks.
Absolutely.
Go visit Gertrude Street and say hello to Tim.
Or the Grumpy Swimmer in Elwood.
Yes.
If you're that side.
If you're that side. Do take a trip over to Books for Cooks. I love going in there.
Me too.
I go in and it's like, oh, it's like Nath going to Masters.
It's excellent.
I go nuts in the cookbooks.
Yeah.
It is good.
And we have literally hundreds of cookbooks in our house. Mm. Too many. Mm. Half of them, though, are art, like Massimo Bottura's book. It's just so beautiful to look at that I couldn't possibly ever cook from it.
No. Coffee table book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big time.
Yeah, and Alex Atala's book.
Dom.
With the most, the most fascinating thing in there is pineapple with ants.
Which is
a dish I can never eat, thankfully.
We're back on pineapples?
What if it's not crushed? What if it's fresh pineapple?
That sends me to hospital.
Oh, wow.
So it is a piece of pineapple with a particular ant that is indigenous to the Amazon in Brazil.
Wow.
And that is the dish.
Wow. Mm.
And it's fluoro green. I love the fluoro green pages. They look really cool.
Yes.
So it's a lifestyle book.
It's a lifestyle book. Yes, coffee table.
Absolutely.
Pop it on there.
And he's so passionate about the Amazon and the local ingredients and sort of that whole local seasonal idea, which I think chefs around the world are interested in.
And it's super exciting.
If people need to go to your website, there is, first of all, the culinary carton, which is, I know you're undergoing testing and stuff, but people can go and get a bit of an idea.
They can get an idea. culinarycarton.com.au. More importantly, though, St Kilda Burger Bar.
Yes.
That's where it's at. And that's we're fortunate enough to be www.burger.melbourne.
No.
So we have what they call a TLD, top level domain,
yes.
.melbourne, and it's burger.melbourne. And that's you'll see that there's a
fascinating
St Kilda Burger Bar. behind that.
And the merchandise is fantastic. This gorgeous hat, and I've got something to put my beer in.
Yeah, I just thought I'd bring you a little gift today, Pete.
Very
and Alice.
Happy.
Yeah, I'm going to put my pens in that.
Okay.
It is time for me to say farewell. Thank you, Alice. Thank you, Robbie. Coming up, I'm very, very pleased to say that the Escape Pod is back for this grid at this time slot. So Jo's in there. She's furiously waiting for me to shut up so she can start. She's talking all things travel. It has been a very lovely afternoon. Thank you for your company. I will be back maybe next week, maybe not. We'll see what happens during the week. Do have a lovely afternoon. Enjoy the Melbourne sunshine. Go North Melbourne tomorrow over the Brisbane Lions. Until then, I shall leave you in peace. Thank you, Alice. Thank you, Robbie.
Thank you,
Adieu.
Pete.
And I'll pass you over to Jo. It's time for the Escape Pod. This has been Cravings. Goodbye.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.